Hello, full bodied family, and thank you so much for tuning in to an episode of Full Bodied Crime. My name's Kayla, and I will be your host for the show. For some of you, this crime is going to sound familiar. Case one, the murder of Adrian Jones. I know a few of you have listened to it, but I did want to redo the episode because I want to provide you guys with my best work. And my first go around with this was not my best work. I was so nervous and shaking, and to be honest, I couldn't really talk. So this is my second go around. I hope you guys enjoy it. I hope it's better and a little bit higher quality for you guys. Don't forget to follow along with the crime on FB_crime on our Instagram page. Look for case one. You'll see the cover photo of case one, and then the pictures of this case are right behind that if you keep swiping. But if you do continue to swipe, it will be a spoiler alert on pretty much everything I post. So just know that as you go along. Feel free to follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter at fullbodiedcrime. Email us full-bodiedcrime@gmail.com. What else? Facebook, Full Bodied Crime, YouTube, Full Bodied Crime, and our website, full-bodiedcrime.com. You guys, your reviews are so important to me, so please give us a review on anything you listen on, whether it's Buzzsprout, Spotify, Apple, Google. Please just go give us a follow and a review and subscribe and do anything you can, because I really have been enjoying bringing you these crimes, and I hope it continues to go well. So just thank you so much for your support, and without further ado, let's get into case one. So today we're going to discuss the murder of Adrian Jones, also known as AJ. This murder is known as the Texas Cadet Murder, and there's actually a documentary and a Lifetime movie about this case. So the death of Adrian Jones took place in the town of Grand Prairie, Texas, located near the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, which from my understanding is fairly populated but not an insanely huge area. AJ was a beautiful, blonde-haired, blue-eyed teenager who was smart, athletic, and really had the whole world in her hands. I even found one article from TexasMonthly.com that described her as a clear-complexioned, sun-kissed blonde, the kind of girl one boy described as not just good-looking, but I mean good-looking. But one cold December night, someone decided to take that away, and her life abruptly ended at the age of 16 years old. Adrian was a 16-year-old sophomore from the town of Mansfield, Texas. She was born to Bill and Linda Jones and was one of the oldest of three children and had two younger brothers. Her father, Bill Jones, was a hardworking man who provided for his family by repairing heavy construction equipment. He is described as a no-nonsense man who was the leader in a strict, well-structured household. Matter of fact, just a few months before her death, Mr. Jones had just began to let AJ stay out of the house past 9 p.m., and if she did leave the house to go to the movies or nearby Six Flags, she had to show him a ticket stub or some type of evidence to prove that she was where she said she was. He'd even nailed her bedroom window shut so that she couldn't sneak out at night, because apparently Adrian was known for the occasional sneak out to go hang out with her best friends. Bill was actually quoted saying, "I truly feel that if we had some rules that kept her away from teenage temptation, we'd be okay." Which makes this even more heartbreaking. I mean, I remember being that age with strict parents, and even though they really did do so many things right, all the times that I did get in trouble, there was almost nothing they could have done different to prevent it. It's almost like in a teenager's genetic makeup, there's a small amount of rebellion, regardless of how strict and great the parents are. But AJ was all around a great child. She was beautiful, excelled in her academics. She was even taking honors classes and acing them with a 4.0. She studied for hours every night and was an amazing athlete. She was actually a soccer player but had a knee injury, and instead of relaxing and taking this as an excuse to recover like pretty much every other high school person would, AJ decided to join her school's cross-country team to get into better shape. She ended up doing so well in the two-mile race that she helped her team qualify that year for the November regional meet. AJ was super popular around school, and with her beauty, personality, and drive, she was admired by the boys. AJ did enjoy this attention, and her friends called her a big flirt. I mean, we've all been there, right? Linda Jones, Adrian's mom, was actually said to help Adrian put on makeup for 2 hours just to help her look like she wasn't wearing any makeup. Texas Monthly reported that when Linda asked AJ why she put on so much makeup, AJ replied with, "Mom, you never know who I might meet." This tugs at my heartstrings because it seriously felt like yesterday being 16 and feeling like you could meet your future significant other in pretty much every situation of your life. Like when you're going to the grocery store, you're going to have some like life-altering moment where you meet the love of your life, and it's just, you know, crazy. The good old days. So I totally know what AJ was feeling in this moment. Anyways. Not only was AJ a great student, beautiful, extremely popular, and an amazing athlete, but she also had a job where she worked 20 hours a week. At this job, she was described as a superstar employee. I mean, all around, she was an amazing teenager who was driven, loved, and going to do amazing things for this world. Her dream was to study behavioral sciences at Texas A&M University, and it's so unfortunate that we were not able to see the successes she would have accomplished in her life. I mean, she accomplished so much at such a young age that she really would have been able to take on the world. So, the last night she was seen by her parents was December 3rd, 1995. Adrian and her mother had a night like any other. Adrian returned home from her job at the Golden Fried Chicken restaurant. After she got home from work, her and her mother went to the gym for about an hour, then the two went back to their house. After returning home from the gym, everything still seemed normal. Adrian got ready for bed and talked to her boyfriend on the phone. Now, usually her phone curfew was 10 p.m., but her parents were a little more lenient this night because AJ had a boyfriend, Tracy Smith, who was out of town that weekend on a family trip, and so since he was busy with family, AJ's parents let her stay up late on the phone and talk to him for a few more minutes before bed. But her mother did notice that for a brief moment when on the phone with Tracy, AJ clicked the phone over to the other line and whispered something really quick before switching the conversation back to her boyfriend. Her mother asked who she was talking to, and AJ replied with, "Oh, that was David from Cross Country, and he's just upset about something." Linda then let her talk to her boyfriend for a few more minutes, but then around 10:45 p.m., Linda told AJ to turn off the lights and go to bed. In this moment, looking back, she did recall that AJ seemed somewhat anxious, but Linda didn't think too much of it. I mean, Adrian turned off her lights and went to bed. Everything seemed normal. But that was the last time Adrian's family saw her alive. The last time they would hear her voice in person, and the last time Bill and Linda would ever have a routine night with her daughter. With their daughter. After Adrian went to bed, she would never be seen alive again. A little bit after midnight, one of AJ's younger brothers heard a truck outside and got out of bed to investigate the noise. He did see what he thought was a pickup truck driving outside of their house, but he just went back to bed and kind of wrote it off. The next morning, the Jones family woke up. Everything still seemed normal, except Adrian was not in her bed. She was not in the bathroom, not eating breakfast, just nowhere to be found. Adrian's younger brother, Justin, woke up his mom around 7 and asked her where Adrian was. Now, Linda wasn't immediately alarmed, and although they couldn't find AJ, they tried to come up with a logical explanation and assumed that maybe she had gotten up early and decided to go on a run before school or go to the school early and start studying. But when her parents found her running shoes, they knew that AJ wasn't on a run, and this is when they became increasingly concerned over where their daughter was. By noon, Linda was in sheer panic. She called her husband and told him that something was really, really wrong. Adrian wasn't at home. She wasn't at school. She was literally nowhere to be found. And unfortunately, their worst nightmare would soon become a reality. That next morning, December 4th, 1995, on a rural road, a farmer was driving his early commute to work when he noticed the body of the female on the ground. Behind a barbed wire fence lay the body of a teenage girl. She'd endured so much trauma that her face was nearly unrecognizable. She had been shot twice in the head with a 9mm pistol and had one bullet hole in her left cheek and another in her forehead. She had also been hit in the head with a weight, which caused severe head trauma. Texas Monthly describes her head injury as, "She had been hit so hard on the left side of her head that the skull above her ear was caved in like a pumpkin." One identifying piece of clothing was her shirt that read, "UIL Region 1 Cross Country Regionals 1995. It didn't take investigators more than a few hours before they realized that this was the body of Adrian Jones, and medical examiners would later theorize that she died sometime around 1 a.m. that December 4th morning. There was the gorgeous, hardworking, studious, athletic, talented, and all the above, lifeless body of Bill and Linda's beloved daughter. Just like that, in an instant, less than 12 hours after her family told her goodnight, AJ was gone. Even before her body was found, Linda had mother's intuition and just knew that something wasn't right and terribly wrong. If you remember the night before, AJ was on the phone with her boyfriend and she quicked over really quickly to talk to some guy named David from cross country. So with this information, Linda immediately called AJ's cross country coach and asked who this David guy was. The coach, Leanne Burke, told Linda that there was a David Graham on the team, but that she was kind of thrown off because she didn't even know that David and AJ knew each other or personally socialized outside of cross-country training. But the coach sent someone to go grab David out of his second period class and ask him if he had called Adrian the night before. Now, David seemed somewhat baffled by this question and said, "Did I talk to Adrian? No. Why would I?" Investigators did end up looking into David and conducting an interview, but they were sure that David didn't have anything to do with her disappearance and the murder. I mean, David was a young man who seemed to have a good head on his shoulders. He was a senior at Mansfield High School, a battalion commander of his high school's ROTC program, was enlisting in the military, a good cross-country athlete. I mean, he just didn't fit the description of a murderer, especially the monster that brutally killed AJ. Also, David's name wasn't even stored in Adrian's phone book, so it didn't seem fitting that he was the David who had even called her the night before her body was found. Her friends never even brought up the name David when asked who AJ had like personal relationships with or who she was close to. David even attended Adrian's memorial and was seen to be teary-eyed, which showed that he was grieving along with the rest of the Mansfield High student body. So at this time, he completely did not seem fitting as a suspect, and detectives brushed past David, write him off as a suspect, and continue working hard to establish suspects and figure out who did this to AJ. One of the first suspects was a previous Mansfield teen who was actually arrested for assaulting one of AJ's best friends for apparently messing around with her boyfriend at the time. She had assaulted AJ's friend with a baseball bat, even broke her cheekbone, and gave her a concussion. Not only did she assault AJ's friend, but she also shot her boyfriend after he allegedly had a sexual encounter with this girl. So after the assault of AJ's friend and the shooting of her boyfriend, AJ actually testified in the case against her. And it is rumored that after AJ's testimony, the girl said to her, "I'll get you for this." Now, this was definitely a person of interest for detectives, but after further investigation, this girl had a solid alibi and she was given a polygraph, which she passed, and so she was eventually ruled out as a suspect. Bill and Linda Jones had their suspicion over AJ's boyfriend, Tracy, but he was supposedly out of town with family at the time of the murder, and he also passed a polygraph, and there was no substantial evidence showing any involvement in the crime. However, after interviewing Tracy, he did provide another lead. Returning back to their last phone conversation, Tracy actually said she answered another call from a man named Brian, not David like her mother claimed. Matter of fact, Tracy even said that AJ said this Brian guy was depressed and wanted to meet her later that night to talk. Now, there was a Brian that police were quickly interested in. Detectives had found out that there was another Mansfield High teenager named Brian McMillan, and after further investigating him, he did sound like a promising lead. Brian had previously worked near a location where AJ worked, and apparently he'd become infatuated with her. Linda Jones actually reported that he began to bother her so much that when she saw him coming, she started ducking her head behind the counter at her work. So, I mean, he is someone investigators were definitely interested in, and now when investigators finally interviewed him, he initially said he had no recollection of an Adrian Jones at all, but he later confessed that he did in fact know her. He was also asked if he had talked to her the night of her murder, and he said he was unsure if they spoke. At this point, Brian is really peeking at the top of detective suspect list. I mean, he related his memory impairment, though, to being intoxicated, and he did suffer from depression and was on four different types of depression medications and was also heavily drinking. So the mix of the two would cause him, I guess, to have a memory impairment, and that was his foundation for saying he had one. The scenario was then painted in the detective's head, and the Texas Monthly article states it wasn't hard for the police to put this scenario together. A lonely boy, unable to get the beautiful blonde from the high school to pay attention to him, devising a way to meet her late at night and then losing control. Brian was asked by detectives if he had been to AJ's house that night or if he even took her somewhere, and all Brian could reply was that he simply didn't remember. On December 15th, 1995, 11 days after the murder, police went to Brian's house with a search warrant and arrested him for the murder of Adrian Jones. His truck was impounded, his house was searched, and his story made the front page of the newspaper. Even though Brian couldn't remember the events of that night leading up to AJ's murder, his friends and family were insistent that he had nothing to do with the murder of AJ. His father provided an alibi and, like, promised detectives that his son came home that night and never left the house. Nonetheless, Brian was arrested for AJ's murder. And after spending the holidays in jail, a prosecutor at the DA's office thought it was essential for Brian to take a polygraph test. After passing with flying colors, Brian was released from jail. His release sparked up numerous rumors around town. All students who owned pickup trucks, like AJ's brother had seen outside her house that night that she went missing, they were all investigated, but this resulted in no new findings for detectives. The case shortly goes cold for a brief period of time because about 1 month after AJ's murder, there was a child named Amber Hangerman who was kidnapped and murdered in nearby Arlington, Texas. The case of Amber was actually the basis for the Amber Alert system. She was abducted while riding her bike and then brutally murdered. So, in tribute to Amber, they came up with this early release system to notify individuals in a quicker manner when there's a child abduction to find the child as quickly as possible. So, attention quickly shifted to Amber's case, and it was hard for Adrian's case to even make it in the paper anymore. Also, it was extremely hard for investigators because there was no signs of a struggle, no signs of sexual assault, so they knew that AJ's case was personal and that she was directly targeted. And the hard thing about that is when you're in high school, you have so many encounters with people that you're close with. I mean, random acquaintances, teachers. There are hundreds of people you can come in contact with on a daily basis, which makes it extremely difficult for investigators to narrow down their suspect list. But the town of Mansfield was not going to let this case go unsolved. The high school had rooms for classmates to speak with a counselor. There was a tree planted in memory of AJ next to the junior varsity soccer field, and over 150 of her classmates gathered around the tree, grabbed hands, and recited, "Unity, strength, courage." They were not going to be silent. They wanted justice for their friend Adrian. Linda Jones, Adrian's mom, even consulted psychics to find out what had happened to her daughter. She wore some type of item of her daughter's every single day, and her parents even left the light on in her room at night, wishing they could just wake up from this nightmare, that their daughter would just find her way back home. Her parents also left the curtains to their house open so that people could drive by and see the vanity where she would sit down and put her makeup on every single day. AJ's memory was being kept alive, and nothing was going to stop her parents or the Mansfield community from looking for answers. After a short period of time where the case felt stagnant, the lady named Tina, who was Adrian's manager at the Golden Fried Chicken, remembered something. Something that may or may not be important to the investigation. So she decided to tell detectives anyway. Tina said that a few weeks prior to the murder, Tina and AJ were working a shift together when AJ pulled out a small picture of a boy. Tina asked who the boy was, and Adrian replied with, "His name is David." Well, that's a name we've heard before. David Graham was previously interviewed by investigators pretty much directly after Adrian's death, but it truly seemed like the two had no relation outside of the occasional cross-country team interactions. With this new lead from Tina, investigators decided to dive deeper into David Graham and if there was any relationship with Adrian that had been overlooked. About 1 month before AJ's murder, there was a co-ed cross-country meet in Lubbock, Texas. This is about a five-hour drive from Mansfield, so the high school supplied a large van that took the cross-country qualifiers to this meet. And on the bus was David Graham and Adrian Jones. The team stayed the night at a motel in Lubbock, Texas, and all other athletes like that were there don't remember any interaction between David and Adrian. They don't remember if the two interacted at the motel or even if they talked in the van. I mean, there was no significant noted conversation between the two that led to anyone being alarmed about their relationship. Additionally, David had a girlfriend, and AJ's friends were adamant that she herself or held herself to high standards and would have never pursued someone who had a girlfriend. Now, David was in a relationship with someone named Diane Zamora, and they had met about 4 years before the murder took place, and Diane was said to be the polar opposite of Adrian. She did do cross country as well, but she was brunette, never wore makeup, and seemed to kind of just socially blend in with her classmates rather than being the super popular, sought-after teen that Adrian was. David and Diane began dating in August of 1995, and a month after they began dating, the couple announced that they were engaged. They set their wedding date for August 13th of the year 2000, after the two graduated from their military academies. Shortly after dating, Diane lost her virginity to David, and it is safe to say that she was madly in love with him. Y'all, I remember being that age and in what I thought was love, and it's seriously so intense. Like, your world circles around that person, and it's like you have tunnel vision, and the only thing that you can think about or the only person that matters is that one person. And that's exactly how it was for Diane Zamora. She was so completely indulged in David Graham, her world began and ended with him. Now, returning to the weekend in Lubbock in November of 1995, as said earlier, there was no apparent attraction between David and Adrian at all during the entire duration of the cross-country meet. But later, detectives would find out that apparently when David and AJ had returned back to Mansfield High, AJ began sparking an interest in David and asked him to give her a ride back home. But they didn't go straight to her house. AJ, unexpectedly and to his surprise, asked David to take some back road turns and that he apparently knew were out of the way from the direction of her home. Then something happened that would unknowingly change both of their lives forever. David and Adrian parked behind an elementary school and had sex before taking Adrian back home. The two did well in telling no one of this. Even her closest friends had no idea of this encounter. It seemed to be completely in the heat of the moment, impulsive, and a literal one and done. 1 month after the sexual encounter between AJ and David, on the night Adrian went missing, there was a tapping on a window in nearby Burleson, Texas. A man looked out the window to see his friend David, accompanied by his girlfriend Diane. He let the two in, saw that they were both visibly upset and that their clothes were covered in blood. David begged him not to ask any questions, and him and his girlfriend lied on the floor and held each other until they fell asleep. David and Diane had a very, very unhealthy relationship. Even before they began dating, there was a severe trust and jealousy issue, and the two were literally fire and gasoline. Essentially, their relationship was a recipe for a disaster, and on that cold December night, a disaster is exactly what happened. While investigators were still trying to piece together this crime, David and Diane had both gone into their military academies. At this point, they both completely thought they got away with murder. But this is when confidence and karma combined, and the investigators had their first huge break in the case after months and months of following leads that were complete dead ends. That's when an unexpected tip came in from a very unexpected source. The U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, At the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, an 18-year-old female, Diane Zamora, confessed to her roommates that her and her fiancé killed a teen back in their home state of Texas. Diane even went as far as telling her roommate the victim's name, Adrian Jones. Now, at this time, her fiancé, David Grant, had been training at an Air Force base in Colorado to become a pilot. They both had dreams to get married and have successful military careers, but luckily, justice would prevent this from happening. David and Diane had an increasingly obsessive, toxic, and very unhealthy relationship. An American Justice documentary even interviews David, and he says, "I knew the relationship we had was too serious for that time in our life, and I tried to slow it down, but there was nothing I could do. I was infatuated with her, and she was obsessed with me." Unhealthy much? To add to their unhealthy obsession with each other, the two were bound by the terrible secret of AJ's murder. They had promised to never tell anyone, but Diane broke that promise when she began bragging about their murder to her roommates. The roommates reported the confession to the naval authorities, and they then called the Grand Prairie detectives. Investigators on this case immediately interviewed the classmates of Diane, who all had the same story, and confirmed what they had heard. Of course, Diane said that she completely fabricated the entire story, but investigators were not buying it. David was soon questioned by authorities as well and denied all involvement in AJ's murder. But then the moment investigators had been waiting for finally happened, a confession. In a written statement, David wrote about the series of events that occurred on that fateful December 3rd, 1995 night. The horrifying murder of Adrian Jones is explained from the Texas Cadet Murder Case Crime Documentary. It begins by David Graham explaining that a few nights before the murder, he had told his girlfriend, Diane, that he had slept with Adrian the month before after returning home from that cross-country meet, the one that was in Lubbock. Diane was obviously upset. I mean, this is no news any girlfriend or boyfriend ever wants to hear. But then Diane goes from upset to absolutely enraged. She tells David that he must do the unthinkable and that AJ needed to be killed. David's written statement says, "The only thing that could satisfy her womanly vengeance was the life of the one that had, for an instant, taken her place." He said that he felt so guilty and was afraid of losing Diane that in order to purify, quote, their love, he knew he had to kill Adrian. So him and Diane formulated a plan, and on the night of December 3rd, David had called Adrian and told her to sneak out and meet him around midnight. Meanwhile, he had packed a bag with gym weights and a gun. He wrote initially in his confession that the plan was to break her young neck and sink her in the bottom of the lake. But that didn't happen. Adrian thought she was sneaking out for another sexual encounter with David. So just as planned, Adrian snuck out of her house around midnight and got into the passenger seat of his car. David drove her out into the middle of a deserted field, and Adrian had no idea that these were the last few moments of her life. Diane Zamora was hiding in the trunk of the car, and after David had parked the car, she climbed through the trunk to the back seat, completely shocking Adrian. David and Diane proceeded to attack Adrian, and then Diane grabbed a weight from the floor of the car and struck Adrian in the back of the head while David restrained her. Now, as we know, Adrian was athletic and she was a fighter, and even after being hit in the head with a weight, she still managed to crawl out of the window and run as fast as she could until she stumbled into a barbed wire fence. Her life then ended after David pointed a gun at her and shot her two times in the head. The amazing life of Adrian Jones was gone in an instant. Per David's statement, the couple's first words to each other was, "I love you." Which Diane then followed up with, "We shouldn't have done that, David." You think, Diane? Like, that was not a good idea. David's typed out confession was 4 pages long, and all the investigators needed to arrest both him and Diane for Adrian's murder. David was sentenced to 60 years, and Diane was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. And that is the murder of Adrian Jones. Horrible murder, horrible story, completely avoidable. I mean, just terrible, manipulative, obsessive people. And it's so sad that such a great human being's life had to be taken away at such a young age. I mean, she really would have done amazing things for this world. And it's so sad to see her mom and watch interview tapes. They're still so distraught over the case to date. It's just horrible. I couldn't imagine being a parent in that situation. But with that being said, that is the redo of the first episode of Full Bodied Crime. So I hope you guys enjoyed. I hope you guys liked this one better. Obviously, there is still some glitches, but as you know, I am new to this. I still have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just having a blast doing it. So I thank you guys so much for the support. Please review, subscribe, like us, tweet us, do all the fun things, and DM me if you have any cases you'd like me to solve. Once again, Instagram, FB_crime, Facebook, Full Bodied Crime. Go like our page, YouTube, subscribe to Full Bodied Crime. It's all Full-Bodied Crime, by the way. Our webpage, full-bodiedcrime.com. There's a series of pictures of the murder there and all the sources of where we got our information. Review us, Apple, Spotify, Google, anywhere you get your podcasts. Please go give us a review, leave a comment, show us some love. So thank you so much, you guys. I appreciate the Full Bodied Crime family so much. And thank you, thank you. I hope you all have a beautiful and blessed day. And we will get back to criming soon. Bye-bye.